Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, July 20th, 2021. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Blue Origin Brings Change to Small West Texas Town. Bezos and his company inspire community, create new challenges as residents await first manned rocket launch. By Andrea Leinfelder, staff writer. Van Horn. For most, Van Horn is a stop along Interstate 10, an ideal spot to rest and refuel in the outer reaches of West Texas. It's easy for interstate travelers to miss the odd silver feathers hanging inside restaurants, or to overlook the red and blue rocket mailbox on Broadway Street. They say, "Well, what's going on?" said Lisa Cottrell, who has spent most of her life in Van Horn. And so when you start to tell them, they look at you almost like you're crazy. She doesn't blame them. The locals didn't know what to think when Jeff Bezos first announced he would use their community to launch people into space with his company Blue Origin. That was 16 years ago, a date many Van Horn residents struggle to recall. It almost feels like Blue Origin has always been a neighbor. A quiet, private neighbor until recently, when the world's richest man announced he was going into space. Bezos, his brother, an 82-year-old female aerospace pioneer, and the 18-year-old son of a Netherlands investment firm CEO, will take an 11-minute ride into space on July 20th. They will be the first people to experience Blue Origin's suborbital rocket system. It's a big thing for a small town. Rooms in the hotels and motels are booked. Journalists are descending. The quiet community is the center of global attention. The company's logo, a feather, is painted on the rocket as a symbol. To Blue Origin, the feather represents freedom, perfect flight design, and gentle landings. But around Van Horn, the feather hints at the various ways a billionaire and his space company have impacted the community. Our team started handing these out to town establishments that Blue Origin heavily relies on, a company spokesperson said. Blue Origin has brought money into Van Horn, with its workers eating at local restaurants and buying houses. Some of its employees are becoming involved in the school and local museum. But new demographics aren't always good. This town, like a thousand other rural communities, has seen agriculture diminish and infrastructure deteriorate. Its local improvements often depend on grants. And with Blue Origin's higher-paid workforce, the town no longer qualifies for citywide grants reserved for low- to moderate-income communities. Residents talk about the tight housing market and problem-plagued water system. Still, people are excited to see what comes next, with the possibility that Van Horn will become a major launch site for space travelers. Bezos Exclusive. Bezos became a household name through Amazon.com, which he started as an online bookstore and grew into the world's purveyor of all necessities. He more quietly founded Blue Origin in 2000, just 6 years after Amazon, and later began construction on a West Texas launch site. At the beginning of Blue Origin, everything was hush, 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 said Cruz Parada, who owns Paradise Beauty Salon on Broadway Street. They wouldn't tell you what they were doing. Its facility is nestled among the mountains, some 25 miles north of Van Horn. It's not far from another Bezos project, a clock being designed to keep accurate time for 10,000 years. Bezos acquired his property similar to how Walt Disney bought land in Central Florida, piece by piece, using different names so that prices wouldn't balloon, said Culberson County Attorney Steve Mitchell. At that early stage, Nobody really ever knew it was all a mosaic to put them together, Mitchell said. In 2005, Bezos unveiled his plans in an exclusive interview with the Van Horn Advocate. Larry Simpson owned the weekly newspaper and wrote the front page article published January 13, 2005. The article announced a privately funded aerospace testing and operations center. It said Bezos chose West Texas because he had fond childhood memories on his grandfather's ranch in South Texas. That's my only claim to fame, Simpson said. I know the richest man in the world, and I know his pilots better. Small-town connections. Simpson, 78, is a man of many trades. It's easiest to find him at the office supply store he's owned since 1975. But he could be at the Culberson County Airport selling fuel to airplane and helicopter pilots, or he could be at home eating lunch with his wife. Simpson has seen a lot of changes over the years. Agriculture has become a smaller part of the economy, and the local school is down to 464 students. Its football team recently switched to a six-man division. The city's main street, Broadway, has more vacancies than it used to. The car dealerships and jewelry stores are gone, though Simpson's office supply store persists. Broadway Street also is home to the local Napa Auto Parts franchise, owned by his daughter and son-in-law, Lisa and Vance Cottrell. This Napa has become like a one-stop shop for when Blue Origin needs parts and equipment. The Cottrells also own two restaurants on Broadway, Van Horn Cattle Company and Boots and Scoops. Their daughter, Starvana, manages Hotel El Capitan. I wanted to move to Vegas and do the whole Vegas thing, said Starvana Cottrell, who graduated from New Mexico State University in 2018. But I don't know if I would be getting to serve astronauts. Technically, none of her guests have gone into space from Texas, and those on the Blue Origin roster will stay in company-provided lodging, called the Astronaut Village, that's closer to the launch site. But the hotel does fill up with Blue Origin employees ahead of a launch, and they celebrate afterward. The 63-foot-tall New Shepard reusable rocket system, which consists of a rocket booster and crew capsule, has launched 15 times without people on board. They do a good job about making us feel like we're part of the team and we're all pitching in to help make it happen, Starvana Cottrell said. Van Horn's original silver feather hangs in the Cattle Company restaurant. The dining room of Hotel El Capitan and the back office at Napa Auto Parts also have feathers. Blue Origin said it employs 275 people, plus 50 contractors who are on-site supporting projects each day. Blue Origin brings in engineers, but it also hires locals who work in jobs including construction, purchasing, and food preparation. Van Horn Mayor Becky Brewster said the town's other well-paying jobs come from the school district, hospital, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, as well as other government and law enforcement entities. Local residents also work at the truck stops, restaurants, and hotels along Interstate 10. Changing demographics. The arrival of Blue Origin is changing the demographics of Van Horn. That doesn't always solve the underlying economic problems the town faces. Most of the county's roughly 2,200 people live within the Van Horn city limits. The county's money is made up north, where Brewster said companies are extracting oil and natural gas. Taxes levied on that activity have helped the county build a new school and renovate the local hospital. But this money collected outside of city limits can't be used to improve Van Horn, which desperately needs to upgrade its water system. The existing pipes often burst and place the town under boil water notices. These need to be repaired, Brewster said, and to support growth, the town needs a new well and water tower. It also needs better water pressure on the west side of town, where three hotels are eager to build. Grants have typically been the main funding source for these types of projects, but Brewster said citywide projects no longer qualify for the Texas Department of Agriculture's Community Development Block Grant that's given to low to moderate income communities. Our primary funding source for those types of projects has been taken away from us, she said. I see it as a crippling thing right now because the city doesn't have the benefit of the oil and gas increased tax base. Brewster is applying for a grant from the Economic Development Administration, which considers if the money would help the town attract economic development activities, such as the hotels waiting to come into the city. Blue Origin has written a letter of support for this grant. Its continued expansion would also be an economic advantage to Van Horn. The town also sold its natural gas company and hopes to receive assistance from the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, passed to help the country's COVID-19 recovery. Those various sources likely won't be enough for the project's full scope, and the city is conducting an engineering study to determine what projects should be prioritized. When Blue Origin opened the live auction for a seat on its first crewed flight, the bidding started at $4.8 million. Brewster said that would have been enough to fix the town's most urgent water system issues. The seat ultimately sold for $28 million, donated to Blue Origin's STEM education-focused foundation. That could have fixed all of the town's water system issues and prepared it for future growth. Slow, steady. Brewster wants Van Horn to grow alongside Blue Origin, but she wants it to be sustainable. I want nice, slow, steady growth, she said, and not have to worry about if our water is going to come on when we turn the spigot. Additional housing will be key to that growth. Finding a house that's move-in ready for rent or sale is not a new problem for Van Horn. Angelica Torres and her husband struggled to find a rental in 2017 when they moved from El Paso. They found a property, but stayed only 2 weeks. It was dirty, filthy, unfinished, and had mold, she said. We had a 2-year-old at the time, so it was just not suitable for us. The family moved to Van Horn for her husband's work, and they didn't know how long they'd be staying. They decided to buy a house because they couldn't find a suitable rental. Torres, a licensed real estate broker, has since taken over her father's business, Cardone Real Estate, and is now helping others find housing in Van Horn. The properties are a mix of older homes and newer modular homes. Some Blue Origin employees stay in RV parks. As of June 19th, Van Horn RV Park had 9 sites reserved by Blue Origin workers. One person had been there 824 days. As Torres helps clients find housing, she also talks about the sense of community she feels in Van Horn. Neighbors delivered food when her family was sick with the flu, and a man once pulled over to help her husband carry a dishwasher into the house. Developers have tried building houses in the past. Brewster said one company purchased 4 blocks and built homes on one of those blocks, but the other blocks were never developed. She recalls the houses being listed in the $113,000 range, which shocked the locals. Brewster purchased her home for $42,000 in 1996. But there is at least one couple now building new properties. Bill and Monica Story, who own the local McDonald's franchise, home to another Blue Origin feather, recently bought a 48-unit apartment complex and 12 single-family homes. They're in the process of building a duplex, too. All of these properties are rentals, and they tend to stay full. Becoming neighbors. Texas 54 connects Van Horn to Blue Origin's nondescript entrance. Tarantulas can be spotted crossing the highway, and a portion of the road can become an impassable slough of muddy water when it rains. The Texas Department of Transportation said it's working with Blue Origin on various solutions, including funding for a bridge. Blue Origin said it's discussed public-private partnerships to improve that feature, but on a recent evening, Blue Origin employees and contractors were waiting for the floodwaters to recede. They cheered for those who dared the muddy waters. They pulled out a black GMC Sonoma truck that got stuck. And as the water calmed down, they stood in the mud to help guide vehicles. Many buzzes and getting more involved. The employees attend house concerts hosted by County Attorney Mitchell, a Jimmy Buffett fan who gets trop rock artists to play in his backyard. They eat smothered burritos at Lizzie's restaurant, giving the staff Blue Origin shirts. They are starting to become neighbors, Brewster said. Before, it was kind of like you had Blue Origin and they were just a nebulous entity out there that nobody knew very much about. But now we've got people that are living in town and becoming part of the community. One employee, before he recently moved, was on the school board. Two other employees have joined the governing board for the Clark Hotel Historical Museum. This museum is a mishmash of the town's history. Supporters hope to develop a transportation exhibit that highlights the town's evolution from trains and horse-drawn carriages to space travel. A model of Blue Origin's new Shepard rocket system was recently displayed on an old saloon bar. I am interested in always updating the history of this town of Van Horn and the county, Culberson County, said Patricia Golden, who keeps the museum running and curates its exhibits. There isn't much you can see when you drive out to where the rocket launching area is, she said, so it'd be good to have something easier for the public to understand what's going on, to give them more detail. Being rocket scientists. Outside the museum is a rocket-shaped mailbox, welded by high school students. Blue Origin has deeply impacted our school district in an extremely positive way, said Ken Bao, superintendent of the Culberson County Alamore ISD. They have helped us realize that we can be rocket scientists. Bao joined the school district in 2017 with hopes of creating an early college high school. It was with help from Blue Origin, Bao said, that he selected three degree pathways, welding, computer science, and health and instrumentation engineering technology. Blue Origin wrote letters of support that helped Bao secure funding for this program. In the fall of 2020, incoming freshmen became the first cohort of the Van Horn Technology Early College High School. They can graduate with a welding certification, FAA Remote Drone Pilot Certification, or an associate's degree. Aralee Zamudio, 18, graduated before that program started, but still earned an associate's degree in 2020. Zamudio credits Blue Origin employees for why she chose to pursue aerospace engineering at the University of Texas in Austin. I always liked space, so I knew I wanted to do something in space, Zamudio said. But there's so many majors to choose from. Zamudio expects to graduate from UT next year and would like to get a job at Blue Origin. She wants to show other Van Horn students that it is possible to graduate from a small rural town and help a company such as Blue Origin launch people into space. This article is entitled, Hospitals See Spike in Virus Numbers. 111 cases were most in 1 week in county since the beginning of April, by Stuart Doreen. The number of COVID cases and the amount of those hospitalized are spiking in Midland County and at Midland Memorial Hospital. Midland Health reported Monday morning that the number of active COVID patients is up to 24, around triple from the total earlier in the month. Three of those patients are on ventilators. In fact, the percentage of COVID patients compared to the total number of patients at Midland Memorial is the highest since late May. Other areas where numbers appear to be increasing include the 9.9 positivity percentage at Midland Health testing centers last week was the highest percentage since late February. Midland Health reported 42 positive tests, the highest number since late May. The Midland Health Department also reported a high number for COVID cases of those residents inside Midland County. The Midland Health Department reported 111 cases last week. That total was more than the previous week, 74, and more than double June 27th to July 3rd, 44 cases. The 111 cases were the most in 1 week inside Midland County since April 4th to the 10th. There were 105 during the entire month of June inside Midland County, according to the health department. The rise in numbers will be a topic addressed during the Midland Unified Command Team's press conference this Wednesday. This article is entitled, Septic Tanks to be Pumped by County. Commissioners okay pumping to mitigate health risk after flood, by Caitlin Randall. On Monday, the Midland County Commissioners Court approved pumping out the septic tanks of residents whose sewage systems were damaged because of recent flooding. Commissioners set the following criteria for determining if someone is eligible to have their septic tank pumped. The county must be under an emergency declaration approved by the Commissioners Court. The residents must be within the current floodway. The residents must be under standing water for at least 72 hours. It must be in an area where the water is no longer flowing freely and has been dammed up for at least 72 hours. Emergency management will make a final decision based on an investigation. Counties are usually prohibited from spending taxpayer money on private residences, but County Attorney Russell Malm said Midland County is able to in this case because it's an emergency situation with a public health concern. The majority of eligible homes will be in Precinct 3 near Cotton Flat Road, where the Commissioner's Court last week approved pumping out standing water that had been in that neighborhood since heavy rainfall earlier this month. Commissioner Luis Sanchez said all standing water had been cleared as of Monday, but the areas affected had not dried out. Emergency Management Director Justin Bunch said the cost to the county would be about $100 for each household. Sanchez estimated there are about 50 to 60 people in Precinct 3 whose septic test systems have been affected. This article is entitled Small Bites, Local Places to Celebrate National Hot Dog Day, by J.C. Lewis. While some may think National Hot Dog Day lands on July 4th with the nation's hot dog eating contest, it is this Wednesday. Here are some eateries celebrating National Hot Dog Day. Midland will soon have a new hot dog food truck. NTO Hot Dogs Express will feature Venezuelan hot dogs, Texuelan, and German food, according to the Facebook page. With hot dog recipes from around the world, the truck will be at the downtown farmers market on Saturdays and the Golf Course Road Church of Christ parking lot on Friday evenings. Visit here for more information. McAllister's Deli is celebrating National Hot Dog Day by introducing a pretzel dog in partnership with Auntie Anne's for a limited time. Auntie Anne's Kids Pretzel Dogs, sweet pretzel dough wrapped around a bite-sized hot dog, are available for a limited time at McAllister's Deli, according to a press release. The meal comes in a three-piece or five-piece with a choice of side and a mini chocolate chip cookie. The Kids Auntie Anne's Mini Pretzel Dogs start at $2.99. Sonic Drive-In will offer $1 hot dogs all day on Wednesday. Wiener Schnitzel will offer 5 chili dogs for $5 on Wednesday. Hot dog enthusiasts can also enjoy the Texas Barbecue Dog, Aussie Dog, Green Chili Chili Cheese Dog, made with Hatch Green Chilies, and more at Midland's location at 5313 Loop 250 Frontage Road. Try a hot dog in a tortilla at Torchy's Tacos. The Republican, a jalapeno cheddar sausage, pico de gallo, cheddar jack cheese, and poblano sauce on a flour tortilla, is here to stay on the main menu. During the pandemic, the Republican and Independent Tacos were removed from the menu, but the Republican is back. However, that doesn't mean it will stay the same. The chain is looking into creating a different Republican and independent taco. This week, the Midland Rockhounds will be playing at home against Corpus Christi. The many food stands at the stadium also offer a peanut butter and jelly bacon hot dog. Enjoy a hot dog at the ballpark this week. More food news. Alley Cafe will have a Dow wine dinner Thursday at 6:30 p.m. in the Lion's Den at Alley Outdoors. The five-course meal will feature summer butter lettuce salad, creamy lobster pasta, Sicilian flatbread, filet mignon Oscar, and old-fashioned apple dumpling. Tickets at $125 per person can be reserved by calling Whitney at 817-733-1699. This Saturday, support the 311 Ministries Pints for Pencils Back to School fundraiser event. Starting at 6 p.m. at Eccentric Brewery at 1402 Cotton Flat Road, there will be a Pachuco mobile food truck and live music with 12 craft beers on tap. Patrons can buy a $15 glass and $5 beer refills all night long. The Midland Downtown Farmers Market will host a back-to-school drive this Saturday. The Rainbow Room will distribute backpacks to Permian Basin children in Child Protective Services and foster care in August. The supplies are being gathered for a fill the backpack work session at the end of July. Drop off school supplies to be donated to children. A drop off box will be located on the K Street curve in front of the soap company. Items that can be donated include backpacks, binders, colored pencils, composition notebooks, crayons, dividers, earbuds and headphones, erasers, folders, glue and glue sticks, hand sanitizer, highlighters, markers, notebook paper, pens and pencils, pencil pouches or boxes, rulers, scissors, spiral notebooks, and tissues. This article is entitled Bradley to Run for State Senate's District 31 Seat, from Odessa Headlines. Big Spring businesswoman and school board official Stormy Bradley has declared her candidacy in the upcoming 2022 Republican primary for the District 31 seat in the Texas State Senate. According to information from Bradley's campaign website, Bradley is the owner of Bulldog Steel in Big Spring and serves on the Coahoma Independent School District Board of Trustees. Bradley resides in Big Spring with her husband and two young sons. District 31 in the Texas Senate covers a vast region across West Texas, stemming from the Permian Basin to the Texas Panhandle. The district, which presently includes 37 counties, boasting Odessa, Midland, Amarillo, and Big Spring as its largest cities, and is currently represented by State Senator Kel Seliger, Republican Amarillo. Seliger has yet to announce whether he intends to seek re-election. With the Texas legislature set to redraw district maps this fall, it is unknown if the boundaries of the present district could change before the next election. Redistricting is also expected to push the usual dates of the 2022 primary election date back from March, when they are usually held, to May or even as late as June. The final date has yet to be determined by the legislature. This article is entitled "Beatenbau Gets Okay to Build Townhomes" by Mella McEwen. After being rebuffed in requests for zone changes to allow it to build smaller, more affordable homes, Beatenbau got approval for a similar but different project. The Planning and Zoning Commission unanimously approved the home builder's request for a zone change from AE, Agricultural Estate District, to TH, Townhouse Dwelling District, on a 9.7-acre tract of land at Occidental Parkway and Fairgrounds Road. Beatenbau plans to develop townhomes on 40 residential lots in a project that is expected to include three common areas. Beetenbaugh officials told commissioners the townhomes will be about 1,500 square feet per unit, and the company has a goal of keeping the price under $200,000. Officials also said the company is looking to expand its business beyond single-family housing construction and would consider leasing out townhomes that don't sell. There was less positive news for Jamie Bowers, who had her request for a zone change from Z, commercial district, to TH, townhouse dwelling, for a property at 407 South Stonewall Street, denied by commissioners. Commissioners agreed with city staff, which argued that developing the property as a townhome would be inconsistent with the character of the area, since the majority of the existing homes in the area are single-family homes. There is also concern about incompatibility between land uses, since that area is also zoned for commercial development. The lot's location does not allow for a smooth transition between residential homes and potential commercial development, staff said. FP Westridge Energy Plaza LP saw approval of its request for a zone change from O2 Office District to RR Regional Retail on 3.093 acres at Champions Drive and North Loop 250 West Frontage Road in preparation for future development. Commissioners also unanimously approved a request by Joanne Cervantes for a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption at her business at 3201 West Wall Street. Cervantes told the commissioners her business has a number of vendors, including a hair salon and a cafe. She sought the SUD for a bar area to be called One More Round, where customers could purchase alcohol to sip while they shop among her vendors. Hours will be from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday, and noon to 6 p.m. on Sunday. This article is called Local Briefs. Four file on first day of city filing period, by Stuart Doreen. Three Midlanders filed Monday for at-large seats on the Midland City Council. Dustin Johnson joined current at-large councilmen Spencer Ropnett and Michael Trost in filing to put their names on the November 2nd ballot. Scott Dufford also filed with the city secretary's office to run for the seat he currently occupies in District 1. The seats on the ballot are District 1, generally North Midland, District 2, generally East and South Midland, and two at-large positions, elected citywide. The Midland City Secretary's Office reports that the filing period will take place from July 19th to August 16th. It is expected that the at-large race will be one of the most crowded local elections in recent memory. Three other Midlanders announced candidacies prior to the start of the filing period. To see the map of the city council districts, go to https://www.midland-texas.gov/238/mayor-city-council. Midland teen dies in car crash, by Caitlin Randall. A Midland teenager was killed and four others were injured in a vehicle crash on State Highway 302 northwest of Odessa Sunday night, according to a press release from the Texas Department of Public Safety. About 10 p.m. Sunday, a Dodge Charger rear-ended a Peterbilt truck tractor towing a semi-trailer, the release states. A preliminary investigation revealed that the driver of the Dodge Charger failed to control their speed after the vehicle in front of them slowed down to turn into a parking lot. Nicholas Tarotsas, 19, who was a passenger in the Dodge Charger, was pronounced dead at the scene. He was not wearing a seatbelt at the time of the crash, the release states. The driver and two other passengers in the Dodge Charger were transported to Medical Center Hospital in Odessa with incapacitating injuries. The driver of the truck tractor was also transported to Medical Center Hospital with non-incapacitating injuries. Woman charged with sex crime. Clarissa Marie Olivas, 42, was arrested and charged July 15th with continuous sexual abuse of a child. According to Olivas' arrest affidavit, the victim told investigators that Olivas began sexually abusing her when the girl was about 6 years old, and the abuse continued until she was about 11 years old. Olivas was released Sunday from the Middle County Jail on a $25,000 bond, according to court documents. This article is entitled, Texas Rains Bring Out Acid Shooting Land Lobsters, by Abigail Rosenthal, staff writer. Rain doesn't just bring floods and flowers. It apparently also awakens creatures that appear to come from the depths of hell. Big Bend National Park in Texas shared a photo this week of a visitor near a campsite. A vinegaroon, a sort of ungodly land lobster that can shoot acid from its tail. And apparently this vinegaroon is on the hunt for food and love. Aren't we all? Vinegaroons are also known as whip scorpions and hunt other insects for food. They can also shoot a well-aimed spray of 85% acetic acid, or vinegar, hence the name, from their tails as a defense mechanism, and if they weren't already terrifying enough, they also have large pincers. The park said in its post that the summer rains lure vinegaroons from their burrows. This article is entitled, Blue Origin Rocket Set for Launch Today, by Andrea Leinfelder, staff writer. Van Horn. Texas is finally sending people into space. Today, three men and one woman will board Blue Origin's New Shepard rocket system in West Texas. Their 11-minute journey will provide views of the Earth's curvature and 3 to 4 minutes of weightlessness. It will also make Texas, where NASA has long-trained astronauts and then sent them to Florida or Kazakhstan for launches, the 4th state to send people into space. Blue Origin is preparing to launch its first crewed mission today at 8 a.m. The crew consists of Jeff Bezos, the 57-year-old billionaire who founded the company in 2000, his brother Mark, 53, Oliver Damon, 18, and 82-year-old female aerospace pioneer Wally Funk. They will ride on the New Shepard suborbital rocket system, which is 63 feet tall and consists of a rocket booster and crew capsule. The system is autonomous, meaning there are no pilots inside. The combined vehicle lifts off from Launch Site 1, which is a private launch facility located north of Van Horn. When the rocket and capsule have climbed roughly 47 miles above sea level, the capsule will separate and coast above the Earth, above the Kármán line that's 62 miles above the Earth. The booster will return for a controlled, rocket-powered vertical landing. The spacecraft will descend more slowly, giving occupants time to admire the Earth and do a few somersaults. 3 drogue parachutes, which are used to slow and stabilize the capsule, will be deployed several thousand feet above the Earth. These are followed by the 3 main parachutes, and then just before touchdown, a retrothrust system will expel a cloud of air beneath the capsule. It will be moving about 1 mile per hour when landing. This is the first operational and commercial flight of New Shepard, Blue Origin CEO Bob Smith said during a news conference. We followed a methodical step-by-step approach to get to this point in time. We're ready, and we can't wait for Tuesday. New Shepard has flown 15 times without people on board. The capsule landed successfully on each of those flights, and the rocket booster has landed in a gentle upright position in all but the first flight in 2015. These flights have tested a variety of features, including the escape system, which pushes the capsule away from the rocket booster should an issue arise, and safely landing the capsule if one of the main parachutes doesn't open. We learned how to make a vehicle safe enough that we'd be willing to put our loved ones on it and send them to space, Smith said. Bezos invited his brother, his best friend, to be on this inaugural flight. He's also giving a free ride to Funk, who has waited 60 years to go into space. In 1961, Funk volunteered for a privately funded program that tested women for astronaut fitness. She was one of 13 women, called the Mercury 13, who passed the same physical and mental tests as the seven male astronauts NASA selected for its first human spaceflight program. The Mercury 13 never went into space. Damon, the son of a Netherlands investment firm CEO, represents the first paying customer. Blue Origin initially held an auction for this seat, but the winner, who bid $28 million, being donated to Blue Origin's STEM-focused foundation, is not flying on the first crewed mission due to scheduling conflicts. Blue Origin did not identify the auction winner. Damon's father, Joe's Damon, was a participant in the auction and had secured a seat for his son on the second flight. Oliver Damon was moved to the first flight when the seat became available. Blue Origin did not say how much Oliver Damon's seat cost or how many other people had purchased tickets. The company expects to have three crewed flights, including Tuesday's flight, in 2021. Willingness to pay continues to be quite high, Smith said. Our early flights are going for a very good price. Prior to liftoff, the four people on Tuesday's flight will have completed 14 hours of training over 2 days. This training includes classroom instruction and time in a simulator. It culminates with mission rehearsals covering five different scenarios and a final exam. It's much less training than NASA astronauts undergo, but Ariane Cornell, who has completed this training as Blue Origin's Director of Astronaut Sales, described it as a thorough program. Not only did I feel confident in my own ability to go up as an astronaut on New Shepard, she said, but felt extraordinary confidence in the team here at Blue Origin that's going to be operating this vehicle, as well as a beautiful piece of engineering that our team has pulled together in New Shepard. Texas will join Florida, California, and New Mexico as states that have launched people into space, said Phil Smith, a space industry analyst at the analytics and engineering firm Bryce Tech. Florida remains the only state that has launched people into orbit. But with Blue Origin, Texas will soon be a player in the emerging space tourism market. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, July 20th. Betty Thornton Connolly. Betty Thornton Connolly passed away on Friday, July 16th at the age of 94. Private family services will be held at a later date. Betty was born on July 24th, 1926, to Katie and James R. Thornton in Denison, Texas. She moved to Midland in 1950. She is preceded in death by her parents, siblings Katie Potter, Thelma Lee Cartwright, and Jim Thornton. She is survived by her daughters, Debbie Connolly and Andy Connolly, grandsons Connolly Gavecker and Cole Bryan, and grandchildren Ryder Gavecker, Rhett Gavecker, and Katie Bryan, along with several beloved nieces and nephews. In lieu of flowers, the family would ask donations be made to First Christian Church, or Hospice of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Stephanie Arnold. Stephanie Arnold returned home on Wednesday, July 14th. She finished her long battle with cancer and won the victory of an eternal home and rest. Stephanie was born in Lubbock on January 27, 1962, to Jack and Iris Estes. She is survived by her parents, also her husband Bruce Arnold of Midland, daughter Katie Brannon and her husband Chad of Odessa, two grandchildren, Tristan and Brennan Clayton, daughter Abby Simpson, PAC, and her husband Sean Simpson, MD of Lubbock, brother Randy Estes and his wife Lisa of Goddard, Kansas. She also has many nieces and nephews. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, July 23rd, at Golf Course Road Church of Christ. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Odos Alvin Capps III. Odos Alvin Capps III, 53, of Midland, passed away on July 11th at Midland Memorial Hospital in Midland. Odos was born on August 12, 1967, to Odos and Sue Parks Capps in Austin. He is survived by his spouse, Tammy Lynn Capps, two children, Cassandra Capps, Chris McKenzie, and Cody Capps, Kirsten, five grandchildren, and three siblings. A memorial gathering was held at his home on Saturday, July 17th. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Saul A. Hernandez. Saul A. Hernandez, 54, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, July 18th, surrounded by his family in Odessa. Rosary will be held on Thursday, July 22nd at 7 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Chapel. Funeral Mass will be held on Friday, July 23rd at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, July 20th, 2021. UTPB official adds new role by Ruth Campbell. RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. After 3 years with University of Texas Permian Basin, Tanya Lowry has another hat to wear. Having been the Chief Compliance Officer since 2018, Interim Chief Diversity Officer has been added to her sphere. With respect to the diversity part, Lowry's role will be looking at diversity and inclusion efforts institution-wide and seeing where UTPB can continue to build its diversity and inclusion efforts or tweak them as needed. We want to continue to infuse diversity, equity, inclusion, and social justice throughout UTPB. We want to continue to make sure that UTPB remains a welcoming and inclusive environment and that folks understand the importance of being culturally aware, culturally sensitive, but also understanding, you know, how that kind of plays into the global world, Lowry said. As you know, we are educating our students to go out and be those change agents, so we want them to be aware and have the best skills possible. But in addition to that, we also want to make sure that our employees, as well as our external stakeholders, understand the value that we have with relation to diversity and inclusion, she added. Asked what happens if someone doesn't say the right thing or comply, she said it is a two-pronged answer. On the official side, if there is an allegation related to discrimination or harassment of a protected category, obviously we have some mechanisms in place to address that. There would be an investigation, of course, looking into those matters and then remedying that situation. We have to do that, as you know, because we receive federal funds. Federal funds fall underneath that Title VI. A little caveat, this is an organization, any organization or entity that receives any dime of federal funding. You must ensure that you have a work environment, academic environment, that is free from any type of discrimination and harassment, Lowry said. She said that is the official side. So let's say that someone maybe makes an off-color joke and we get apprised of that situation. So what would happen is we would work with our partners in HR to find out exactly, as well as the people that were involved to find out exactly what happened. Because obviously you have to be a neutral fact finder. But then you would use that opportunity to address that in an educational manner. Sometimes folks just don't know. So, you know, you can help them understand and bridge that gap. And in other entities, sometimes some people are just going to do what they want to do. And in that matter, we would have to have a conversation about that, about what is acceptable and appropriate, Lowry said. If that egregious behavior continues, then obviously we have that conversation. It wouldn't be me, but it'd be HR having that conversation about, I don't know if this is the environment for you, so let's talk about that. But we try not to be punitive because, again, what we want is an environment where everyone, again, feels welcome and included. People are going to make mistakes. We understand that. But part of the way that we help mitigate that is we offer opportunities for training. We offer opportunities for folks to come in and have that conversation. And we really try to help people understand. This is probably why you don't want to say things like that. This is how this could be offensive to someone. But in addition to that, this is how we can move forward together. This includes social media posts. Referring to protected classes, Lowry said examples are veterans, ability status, and gender. Under Title VII and Title IX, it's pregnancy. Anything related to those particular federally protected categories, she said. She added that pregnant and parenting students are covered. Most people don't know that. But what we want to do is ensure that our folks have all the resources needed to be successful in their academic pursuits. But in general, Title IX makes sure that there's no gender discrimination in our academic environment. But in addition to that, if there happens to be an issue related to a sexual assault, we want to ensure that we have the appropriate measures and resources in place, Lowry said. Training for staff is online and in person. Departments contact her department and request training on an implicit bias, for example. And so, per their request, we can do an in-person training. Or if it's easier to do it online, we can instruct that and put it underneath our LMS, which is Canvas, our learning management system, Lowry said. She added that UTPB also partners with other UT schools, and if they've got a canned program or training, UTPB can work with them to conduct the training. It really depends on what the department needs, she said. As for diversity and what it means, that definition is still being worked on because the university wants everybody to have buy-in. While we certainly could come up with a static definition of what diversity is, she said, but everybody has different backgrounds and experiences. But we come together under one unit to help ensure our mission is met. At the same time, what we want to do is be able to say, this is what UTPB definition of diversity is, so we're in the process of beginning those conversations with all of our stakeholders so that we can take in that feedback and then be able to craft the definition that's tied specifically to UT Permian Basin, Lowry said. The definition of inclusion is also being worked on. Lowry said UTPB President Sandra Woodley spearheaded the Diversity and Inclusion Initiative. Last year, the university implemented what was then known as the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee. Lowry and Becky Spurlock, Vice President of Student Affairs and Leadership, co-chaired it. They worked with faculty, staff, and students to look at what they could continue to do on the diversity and inclusion front. And then from there, what has been really a wonderful building upon that DEI committee was Dr. Woodley, in consultation with her colleagues, basically said, I think we want to implement that interim chief diversity officer position, put it within a scope of an individual, and then let them continue that year of planning, Lowry said. So we're going into the official year of planning. The DEI committee lasted for a year, and it's still in effect. That name has been changed to the President's Diversity Council. And so they will work closely with me to kind of move our DEI efforts forward, she added. The President's Diversity Council will serve in an advisory capacity to Woodley, but also help Lowry in her new position. We want folks to understand that you're going to see people that are from different backgrounds and experiences, and so you want to be able to ensure that they have a good experience. Not everybody's going to be a best friend, we already know that, but you need to know how to professionally interact with one another, because these are folks that you're going to get out into the workforce and work with, Lowry said. Lowry said she was recruited from Oklahoma State University, where she served as the Title IX Coordinator Deputy Equal Opportunity Officer. Lowry earned a bachelor's degree in politics from Marymount College of Tarrytown, New York, now called Marymount College of Fordham. She earned a master's degree in communications from Eastern New Mexico University in Portales, New Mexico, and her doctorate in higher education administration from UT Austin. Diversity and inclusion has been a passion of Lowry's since she entered the workforce. My dissertation focused in on how the institutions of education make diversity and inclusion really a specific value. And so through all of my positions, I've given trainings on diversity and inclusion and worked with different committees. But when Dr. Woodley asked me to serve as a diversity officer, it was like, oh my gosh, really? Yay! But really, it's just a culmination of a lot of hard work over the years. It's a fantastic opportunity, and I really do look forward to working with my colleagues on campus, the external community, and looking to see how much better that UTPB can continue to grow and to become, Lowry said. President Woodley is thrilled to have Lowry in her new role. Dr. Lowry comes to this position with a great deal of experience. She is passionate about this work and a true leader on campus. One of her great strengths is helping people feel comfortable talking about uncomfortable things. Our university is diverse with faculty, staff, and students who come from different backgrounds, with different ideologies, and varied life experiences. We have much to learn from each other, and Tanya facilitates this work in a way that is safe and constructive, Woodley said in an email. Visit the UTPB website, utpb.edu.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.